Ready to put a little spin on your day? Then check out Chumba Casino's new online social casino game, Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's free and packed with 10,000 ways to play, only at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
It's time to turn off the lights and turn on the dark.
Chilling tales for dark nights.
Good evening, listener. You're listening to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. On tonight's edition, we invite you to leave behind your safe reality and descend with us into the frightening depths of the most terrifying imaginations. With two audio adaptations of frightening fiction about puny predators and audacious accusations. I'm your host, Paul J. McSorley. And tonight, I'll be your guide as we traverse the dimly lit corridors of your darkest dreams. I also wanted to take another moment to thank you all for your donations. Every continued share, donation, and comment of support helps. Let's keep growing together. Joining us tonight to help to bring life to the frightening fiction of Eli Pope is none other than your host of the evening, Paul J. McSorley. Now get your ticket ready. Take your seat in our theater of the minds and brace yourself. It's time to turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Our first tale this evening is written by Eli Pope and performed by myself, Paul J. McSorley. In it, we meet Betty, a black widow spider, reflecting on her solitary deadly life. With a history of seducing and killing mates, she continues the cycle, driven by instinct and hunger, satisfied by the ultimate predator's pleasure. Now, without further ado, I present to you, Skinny Legs. Her spindly legs moved slowly and awkwardly. The darkness of them almost made them invisible in the dim-lit room, with only a half moon shining through the open window. She was tired, and that was usual. She worked hard during the day, every day. Her job was important. Most times she felt it was thankless. Its only compensation was the food it brought to her table, but she did it every single day no matter how she felt, physically or mentally. Nobody had ever given so much as a hint of promise that this life would be easy. And it wasn't. She had watched her mother do the same each day of her life too, until she was no longer around. Tradition passed down for generations, she imagined. It was just what it was. It was expected. After all, there was no one else to do it, and someday she may find the male that would give her babies to keep the heritage moving forward. Nobody seemed to care about any future, though. In fact, in all honesty, there was no one else around. Betty had no real friends. She actually didn't even realize much of such things. I suppose if she looked hard enough around her surroundings, using every bit of focus her eyes could yield, that she could likely see another body out there in the background scenery. But likely just another busybody taking care of their own business and needs. No time, no need to concern herself. Betty had things to do, plans to prepare. She'd been close to being married a couple of times, but never finalized a commitment, as those mates were never the one worth making any commitment to. None ever felt like the one she considered would make a happy family. Not reclusive enough for her, and she hated that about males. Untrustworthy and always watching other females through their web of deceptions. Betty never had offspring, so her nest still remained empty. Life just continued to weave its way into a slow, mundane fabric of living. What a crooked web we weave. She smiled at herself with the limerick. If truth be known, she was very talented at weaving crooked webs. She had had practice at such. The problem was that Betty, the name she liked to be called, even though it wasn't really her name, Betty liked being alone. She couldn't blame her previous mates for leaving and never coming back. They just disappeared into the scenery. That's exactly the right way to leave. Disappear without grandioso. Was living a quiet, hidden life genetically instilled? Nature versus nurture? Betty did, however, stay relatively close to where her family had once been. She missed her mother occasionally, and being the nostalgic being she was, she liked reflecting on her past. She never knew her father. He had been long gone by the age of realizing what a father was. A lot of her friends had lost their fathers too. The women of the community, as scattered as it was, always quietly stated that males were good for just about one thing. And after completing that one thing, they were pretty much useless gallivants. So why keep another mouth to feed around if they wouldn't contribute to the family? Either run them off or dispose of them, she supposed. And that's exactly what she had done. Twice. But those are stories better told at another time. She was done with that part of her world. She was getting too old to worry about going through that again. God forbid finding another lazy leech and starting that cycle over again. Tried it, done it, done with it. The pleasure is hardly worth all the effort. And then being the responsible one for the penalty to the pleasure. I know, the wrong way to think about offspring. But really, you reach that certain stage in life and you look back at costs versus what you get out of it. What had I gotten in my past when dealing with getting sex? She quietly spoke the word aloud. A lot of work, a lot of worry, and then a lot of loneliness. Again, did it, done with it. Why is it that just because you feel more comfortable in the shadows and not out in full display of the bright sun, that others fear you and talk bad about your business? Betty thought to herself. She never could understand that. Sure, if you messed with her, Betty could bite back, but she never went looking for trouble. Would never dream of starting a fight. She would rather just be alone amongst her own quiet business. But you mess with Betty, you get the business end of a pain you'll not soon forget. Besides, others just get in the way, mess things up and fearmonger those close by just because she lived differently. Oh well, Betty said. That's life. Live, learn, then you die. The cycle is really too short to think about. The seasons moved more quickly in Betty's life these days. She was almost to the point of just lying around reminiscing a lot of the day away. The monotony of doing the same things over and over, and of course, ending up with the same old results. Sometimes, as she rested on her laurels, enjoying the light breeze of the outdoors stretched out on her homemade hammock, she would begin to daydream about her past. The good, the bad, the ugly. Yes, she would let her mind drift back to the days of companionship before they turned sour. A wicked smile would drift across her face as her mouth would widen. A limerick would jingle jangle off of her lips. A flutter of the heart leads to a romp in one's bed. A snack dances across your tongue, leaving your tummy well fed. False feelings of love drop like clothing that's shed. But he's too comfortable to leave without killing him dead. Now there's babies that dangle unraveling like thread. Leaves you back to feelings empty once they've grown and then fled. The cycle's a circle, the sickness widespread, leaving you a bit weary until your next victim's bloodshed. The smile that began to grow as she sang her little song began to sink just a bit to a tone mixed with regret. But that wickedness wasn't totally snuffed out like pinching the flame of a candle with wet fingers. There were other mental confessions that were brought about from the darker memories of her past. Brutalities she had been a part of and pushed deep into the black crevices. Guilt never stays buried forever, especially when that memory lurks while floating on a bed of warmth surrounding the cold heart that hungers for that kind of sick pleasure. Love, ha! She grumbled, her mood quickly changing as her thin legs began to quiver and shake, rattling the webbed hammock she rested. Betty was a statistic. Betty was a killer. female murderers make up just under 17% of serial killers, meaning that title was more of a male's game. Betty liked being a unique breed. Deep down, she missed the joy of doing her dirty work to the male members of her dark web. She could dance around the internal battle between her good and bad sides all day long, all life long. But she knew that her true desires would bubble back up to the surface once again. Once those embers of the killing fire began to smolder, the itch would need answered once more. It was a calling. It was in her blood, body, and soul. It was heritage, a bright red hourglass tattooed on her back showing all who saw it that she was a black widow of sorts, a gift likely given to her by her birth mother. She held no proof her mother was part of this club she was a member, but she also had never known her father or who he was. Not so much as a name ever mentioned by her. It was as if he had never existed. Betty knew there was something different about her and her mother, but she had always attempted to keep any thoughts or questions she had bottled, closed, and only opened up in the shadows of a dark night. Others would never understand the uncontrollable will to carry out such devious acts like murder. True pleasure wasn't only sexual, causing slow, gut-wrenching, pleading pain to the one who had just been fooled into thinking they were masters of giving pleasure, when in reality, they sucked as lovers. That was true ebullience, or enthusiasm. Payback was pain for their insignificant attempts at putting a partner's satisfaction before theirs. All males fooled themselves from the reality that they were really all about cracking their own nut rather than working hard enough at taking their time to aid in giving satisfaction to the one they were betting down. But their feeble minds wouldn't allow them to accept that they really held no power at all. They'd be better off in the shadows masturbating and living out their dull lives in solitude instead of playing my lover and dying for their bush league attempt at lovemaking. In retrospect, I suppose I truly am a dark, evil murderess. When I think about those past situations, pleasurable evil grins do always quickly race across my lips. My skin tingles at the memories of watching the look of shock as reality of their circumstances cross their faces, while the sparkle in their eyes slowly fade away. Females hold the ultimate control. A queen is the true rule behind any throne. Letting the king think he was master of our domain, but quietly knowing that fact was far beyond any male's mental capacity, was, well, all in the way the queen's talent of masquerading lays in her presentation, faking all the way up until that first sting of our venom penetrates their tiny brains. Once their receptors get a taste of the numbing pain that we ladies are able to dispense all too easily with our sharp implements, well, I must admit, I miss watching that flash of epiphany wash across a male's slow-dying face as he lays shaking uncontrollably while twisting himself up in my web of discreet deceit. His poor spindly hands still holding onto my skinny legs as his eyes beg for a sympathetic heart to relinquish the agony that I just gifted him. From orgasm to complete organ shutdown, right before one's eyes. Now that's what a true orgasm is. I'm surely not the only one who feels this way. Betty spoke aloud to an empty home. Living on the outer fringe and in the less traveled areas made it more difficult to stumble onto a male looking for a mate. Roads less traveled were just that. But Betty still felt leery and very awkward out in the open. She didn't go out much anymore, but when she did, she still looked good. She looked sexy in black. It helped hide her slightly round midsection. Black and red, those were Betty's colors. A vixen with class. Dark, but very luring. Keeping the bright red hourglass under our bellies, less giving any hint to what surprise may lie ahead. Bobby Flanagan was a ladies' man. He coyly checked himself out in the mirror behind the bar at the small mom-and-pop burger joint as he sat down on the stool. He gave it a quick spin so he could survey his surroundings, looking to see if there were some spicy young thang to use his coy and flirtatious lines on. He was passing through this little burg on the way to better things in the big city, But why not break a heart along the way, he thought. Yeah, I'll pick up some young little hayseed and catch me a little fun in the sun. A little rub on a nub, poke in the whiskers. He smiled shrewdly to himself as the old lady standing by the coffee pot nodded towards the kitchen with a grin. He heard her call out to someone he couldn't yet see.
Customer out front at the bar.
Bobby spun his stool back to the bar, waiting to see what kind of loser would push through the small swinging door dividing the kitchen from the restaurant. He could only imagine a younger version of the old lady that called back. Probably just as backwoods and dumber than a box of rocks. He moved his glance back to the large window that faced the parking lot where his vintage 1976 Mercury Montego MX, glossy white paint and a bright red Landau top, matching the red leather interior. It wasn't a typical collectible muscle car, but it did have 351 V8 with a top speed of 109 miles per hour. And she was a classy piece of sculpture artistry. Chrome grille and matching factory hubcaps. She turned the lady's eyes wherever he went.
What can I get you, mister?
A young, quiet voice barely broke through the silence and his admiring eye at his ride. Bobby turned, expecting to be anything but impressed with what he saw. He was surprisingly mistaken. A very pretty young lady, probably 18, although he wouldn't bet money on it. But man, was she ever a hot apple dangling from a low branch, just ready for the easy picking.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. On the track, my car's look is everything. But today, I'm talking about more than just paint schemes. I'm talking about my favorite games at Chumba Casino. Check out exclusives like Stampede Fury and my own King Croc Fury. It's just as wild as my car looked in Texas. With over 200 games and new ones weekly, play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Well there, darling. How about for starters, an ice cold Pepsi Cola to cool this steamy sweat I got going on? It's hotter than a frog out on the pond and into the pan. He grinned to himself as he poured on his sorry attempts at sounding homegrown to the part of the area he was visiting.
You gonna want something from the grill, too?
She asked in her soft, innocent voice.
Cause it'll be a few minutes to get it heated back up to temperature, as in it's just about closing time.
What do you have that's real hot and juicy? I like my burger warm and wet. Bobby winked, knowing the little waitress would stumble over his innuendos like the country bumpkin she was. A very attractive bumpkin, but nevertheless. The waitress shyly grinned, her voice stumbling a bit before spitting back her rebuttal.
I get off here in just a bit, and if you'll just sit back and suck on that soda while I finish up here, I think I know a place that is just that. Warm and wet.
She winked. Bingo, Bobby David Flanagan, and holy shit, Batman, he thought to himself. I've just stumbled onto the creme de la creme. Who would have thought this hayseed tiny town would hold such a treasure? I believe I can do that, miss. I didn't catch your name. Mine is Bobby. Bobby David Flanagan from Tupelo. What's yours? She smiled as she leaned over the bar, nodding for him to come closer.
I can't say too loud.
She looked over at the older woman now arranging coffee cups on the shelf.
That's my granny. And she wouldn't like me talking to strangers in town. But my name is Katie. Katie Lynn Higgins.
She slowly moved back as she pulled the ice-filled glass away from the soda machine. Bobby winked at her and quietly answered,
Gotcha. I can be coy,
he said as Katie set the Pepsi on the bar top and slid it over to Bobby. Their fingers lightly touched as Bobby reached for the glass.
Damn! He thought to himself. I miss this one. She's a real humdinger.
His eyes moved from their fingers slowly up to her eyes. They stopped and hovered a bit as he noticed the soft skin gapping in her cleavage. When their eyes met, he lost every bit of the cool he believed he held.
I get off in about an hour.
Katie quietly spoke in a whisper.
I'll give you directions where to meet me in just a bit.
She batted her eyelids, acting like a nervous schoolgirl on a first date.
You bet, Miss Katie. I'll be waiting with anticipation. He wrapped his lips around the soda straw and gave it a quick suck, believing he looked sexy as he did so. Katie nervously grinned. She came back in just a few minutes and slid his ticket for the soda over. As Bobby picked it up, he quickly noticed the note underneath. It held handwritten directions in very feminine handwriting. He sucked down the rest of his soda and gave her a wink of confirmation of the note. He slapped a dollar on the table and took the tab to the cash register.
"That'll be $2.58 with tax, mister," Katie said. "I hope you found everything to your liking, sir."
"So far, little missy, I certainly have. That was the best Pepsi Cola I've enjoyed in quite some time. Cooled me right down. But I'm sure I'll get heated right back up, real soon."
The bell above the door jingle-jangled just before closing. Katie heard the roar of the shiny white car with the red top after Bobby got in. The tires chirped as the rear wheels spun from the gravel as he pulled back onto the highway, moving in the direction she had pointed him.
"He seemed like a nice man, don't you think, Granny?"
"Young men, boys, are all the same, Katie. Cute as buttons until you really get to know them. Then you'd just soon pop them off and let them drop to the floor. That's all they want anyway, for your boobs to fall out so they can ogle them."
She continued to sweep the broom back and forth, collecting the day's dropped crumbs into a pile. Katie meandered back to the kitchen after flipping the sign to closed. She quickly began washing dishes and tidying up the kitchen as her granny took care of the front. Bobby followed the directions the waitress handed him. It took him out of town and down what seemed to be back farm roads. He began to think she may have sent him on a wild goose chase. There was nothing but old farmhouses and cows. He thought of the old scenario with the farm girl and the crazy-eyed father answering the door with a shotgun in hand, and the desire to dice another stranger's body with lead pellets and rock salt. Bobby continued on and rounded the last corner when he saw the old red barn sitting all alone up on top of the hill, desolate and very vacant-looking, just like she had written. Maybe this side stop would be a memory to revisit. Until the next one, anyway. He steered his vehicle to the right and slowly made his way up the bumpy dirt road and then around to the backside of the barn, out of sight from any passersby that may meander past, although he couldn't imagine coming this far out into the boonies without purpose. Betty sensed a disturbance in the area. She bristled a moment before her keen ability to smell caught a scent of a male in the area. She hungered for male attention, and he soon began plucking his vibratory song with his legs onto the shiny strings of her web, attempting to call her out. He had carried his package for quite some time on his journey in finding her, and so he was ready to seduce her into allowing him to plant his palps, the two tiny antenna-like claws near his mouth that held his sperm, into her reproductive opening. He hoped his possible mate had eaten recently, knowing he was at great risk of her sexual cannibalistic tendencies afterwards, should he not retreat quick enough. After all, a male black widow hopes to live long enough to impregnate several lady spiders deep into his old age, rather than becoming a meal performing his purpose. Betty maneuvered her skinny legs quickly to the spot her mate awaited. The vibration of the strings which he stood gave him an excited moment of anticipation. Betty quickly allowed him to insert his palps holding his seed as he began tapping the underside of her body. Before he completed his act, Betty began biting and eating him. Her doing this before he was finished added to the length of copulation time for her, along with giving her an easy meal. Nothing like getting a meal during sex, she thought to herself, as she continued to devour him as he finished. Betty had just added another notch to the list. There wasn't much fanfare. It was just the way it was. She didn't feel evil. She felt no sorrow or pity for her victim. Instead, she merely felt satisfied, and of course, quenched of her hunger as her mate lay quivering, shaking the strings of her web as he lay dying. A quick thought passed through her as she attempted to ready herself for the offspring that would soon come. Another one bites the dust. She smiled at the thought as she drug one of her skinny legs across her mouth, wiping away tiny greasy pieces of her momentary mate's body from herself. Her fragrant pheromones she had put out across her web had indeed attracted the perfect morsel to her web of deceit.
She smiled, briefly wondering if another caller would be attracted as well. A widow's work is never done. Bobby scouted out the barn's inside surroundings. He saw the straw makeshift bed in the corner beside a small woodpile. "I'm not the first to be invited here," thought to himself. "Oh, well, she isn't the first filly I've enjoyed and then escaped any kind of relationship either." He grinned, realizing how easy it was when two willing participants both wanted the same outcome. He pulled out his pack of Lucky Strikes and tapped the pack of smokes against his other hand until one became accessible. Bobby walked over to the open door and pulled out his lighter, holding the flame after flicking the tiny wheel and held it to his lips, inhaling the smoke deep into his lungs. Waiting was the difficult part. Imagining that sweet little body lying naked on the blanket he's brought in from the trunk of his car and laid out on the cushion of straw. The thought brought on movement in his jeans and a rush of adrenaline flowing through his veins as he pictured her skinny legs open and spread over his shoulders as he pleasured her into a frenzy. He put the cigarette between his lips and inhaled again as he adjusted himself to a more comfortable position below. "Katie, Katie, you remember how I felt, my little skinny-legged lady. It's too bad you'll just be another notch in my belt and left broken-hearted till you're 80. Bobby then continued with a whistled little tune that his limerick had come out sounding. The time passed with only three cigarettes until the trail of dust from an old pickup truck followed behind as it made its way up the hill and to the back of the barn. Katie flung the door open and quickly stepped out and down from the driver's seat. She saw Bobby standing at the door, a small stub of a smoke hanging from his lip, attempting to look like a local boy with more cool than the walk-in freezer at the diner was set to. She smiled to herself, knowing just what was going to be happening. Her body tingled and her stomach rumbled. She ran her hands across her backside seductively as she slinked toward Bobby in the barn opening. It was obvious to her exactly what he was wanting. He held no clue at what he was going to get, though, and that thought sent pleasant chills followed with goosebumps across her entire body.
"Well, hey there, stranger. Ain't you looking all handsome and horny for action?"
As she got close enough, her fingers instinctively trailed across the crotch of his jeans.
"I ain't got too long to waste before I gotta get home. Daddy'll be expecting me pretty quickly. And you don't want my daddy upset, I can promise you that."
"I got things fixed up here for you, little Katie. I'm already heated up and ready to get to business if that's what you want."
He winked, fully knowing that that was exactly what she wanted. He knew immediately back at the diner. It were as if two bodies were linked in some sort of inner chemical psychological connection. He wondered if it had been her perfume he immediately smelled upon opening the door and stepping through, or if they just had a natural biological draw to each other.
"Well, don't just stand there. Get out of them jeans and t-shirt, mister, and let's get all tangled up naked as jaybirds together."
She wickedly grinned as she began unbuttoning her short shorts, exposing her belly and the beginnings of closely trimmed hair. Her cleavage bounced as she wriggled her cutoffs down to the barn floor by jiggling her bottom. She pulled her top off and quickly laid back onto the blanket that Bobby had laid out on the straw pallet. Her skinny legs quickly fell open after she pulled her panties off. She watched Bobby's eyes grow wider as he ogled her with sexual starvation, spilling over his flushed face as he sped up ripping his clothes off. He never thought for a minute about any possible dangers of her daddy showing up or anything. He also never spied the object she pulled from her hip pocket and tucked into the straw she laid back on the blanket. A girl can't be too safe these days. Bobby kneeled down and ran his hands up both of her legs as he pushed them farther apart, then moved one hand up to her breasts while he rubbed and tapped on the flesh of her stomach with his other before he began to slide his face closer to her nether region, which, like a male spider, draws his palps to his mate's sexual opening. Bobby remembered Coach Buckner had carefully taught these arachnid facts of reproduction by using words that wouldn't cause the science class he taught to crumble into giggles and faked moans of spidey pleasures. He grinned to himself quietly as Katie's scented pheromones invaded his sensory glands, driving him to be unable to think of anything other than pleasuring himself along with her. He had almost become robot-like in action as his hormones overtook and completely morphed him into a frenzy.
His body pulsed all the while his erection throbbed, aching to push inside her warmth as she groaned. But she pulled his head closer into her and continued to wail out in pleasure. Her grip suddenly slipped and her fingers fell away from the locks of Bobby's long hair they were entangled. He was far too indulged in what he was doing to her to notice her hand lay to the side and dig through the strands of straw in search of what she had buried there. She continued to scream in pleasure as she pushed herself into Bobby, all the while searching until her fingers felt the coolness of the implement she had hid. Bobby never heard the click of the stiletto as her thumb pushed the button, engaging the mechanism to quickly release the 6-inch blade from underneath the grip. He didn't notice the shiny blade in her hand as his head pulled back and he slid his body up her moist and sweat-drenched stomach until he attempted to enter her. He never felt the sensation of danger at what was about to become fatal for him, like a black widow devouring her lover in the throes of passion. The blade slid easily into the soft flesh of Bobby's neck. His head flailed backwards as if he had just orgasmed, but not so much as a moan fell from his lips. He just lifted up briefly and then slumped quickly on top of her as dark red blood pulsed from the side of his neck with each beat of his heart until it became a slow ooze as she lay there soaking it all in, reveling in the pleasure he had given her right up to the last quiver of his dying, fading life. She was drenched in warmth and wetness as her eyes searched past his still head resting on her right shoulder. They scanned the shimmers of light from the sun beating down on the old barn's roof through the years of growing cracks between the rafters up to the decaying roof deck. Specks of dust danced in the air as it hovered slowly downward, in and out of the beams of light that created glowing rays cutting through the room's vast dimness. She had done it again. It seemed to become easier each time. Maybe a bit less satisfying than the last, yet still very pleasurable. Betty turned her head slightly and licked her lips as she eyed Bobby's smooth flesh of his neck, her favorite part of a meal. She drew her mouth closer until she could feel the heat of her own breath reflecting back from his soft, cooling skin. She opened her mouth wider and drew forward until her teeth could touch the softness. Positioning her lips and making a seal between them and the skin below his jaw, she sucked in until she could feel a fold collecting between her lips. She tightened her teeth down upon it like a vise closing around its contents to keep it held fast, her jaws tightening as the skin between them were drawn together where it would flatten no more. Betty clenched her jaws tightly together. The sharp edges of her white teeth pinched the flesh together until a pop was physically heard, penetrating from her mouth and internally throughout her senses. That single moment when the salty taste flooded across the taste buds of her tongue. Ecstasy overtook her, and her eyes rolled up inside their sockets underneath the lids. She came with an intensity that overtook any other sensation she ever experienced. The act of cannibalism. Sexual cannibalism at that. She sighed as the sensations overwhelmed her until, like the evening tide, began to subside. Her daddy would be worried. He would soon begin looking for her. Betty's eyes suddenly opened wide. The whites that surrounded the blue-green irises gave her the look of a crazed person if anyone were alive and there to witness the sight. She knew what she must do. This wasn't her first rodeo. She rolled the body off of her, revealing two red-soaked bodies. She struggled, her muscles all flexing, but managed to wriggle out from underneath her victim who now lay motionless. His head had flopped to its side, and now his vacant eyes seemed to stare past her as if his soul had slipped to the other side, yet still able to see. She knew it wasn't likely, but she did flinch momentarily. She quickly stood and surveyed her surroundings, reacclimating to the current situation. She breathed in and swallowed, realizing quickly as the substance slid down her throat and almost lodging that she hadn't completely chewed the meat, the bite she had taken from Bobby. After coughing a time or two, she knelt back down and briefly scanned his naked body as if picking out the cut of meat at the market. She rolled him over to the edge of the blanket and then stopped to catch her breath before rolling him up tightly inside the blanket like a spider rolls its ketchup in webbing for a later date. She knew she'd have to walk down to the river and quickly wash the blood from her skin. Her clothes would be spot-free, one reason she always quickly shed them before the action. She scanned the area around the pallet of straw after covering up the lumpy blanket with it. That's when she saw the tiny movement from the corner of her eye.
down beside the woodpile in the shadows. The sun's fading light had sent a glowing beam down by chance that caught a spider's web and flashed little strings of lit fiber-like strands of silky thread. On the center of the web was a tightly wrapped carcass of what appeared to be a tiny spider's body wrapped up in white webbing like a cocoon. Just to the side was a large black spider moving its long skinny legs, pushing the cocoon down the web, closing the package ever tighter into an elongated ball. As it moved and crawled along its web, a small red hourglass was seen on its dark black belly.
"Ew!" Betty exclaimed with a sharpness. "A fucking black widow spider with its dead husband," she exclaimed out loud in repulse. "We can't have that here,"
she spoke to herself as she lifted her skinny leg that now sported the cowboy boot she had put back on, and she pointed the toe of it towards the edge, hovering just over the black bitch's thick body. A wave of disgusted shivers raced throughout her body before slamming the boot toe down atop the defenseless arachnid to the sound of a slight crunch and smooshed sound.
"Didn't see that coming, did you?"
She laughed wickedly and gave one quick shiver before her cell phone chirped out.
"Hello?"
she spoke.
"Yeah, Daddy, I'll be right home. Yeah, it was hot today, so I went down to the creek for a quick refreshing swim."
She nodded her head as she headed towards the barn door.
"Yeah, I'm okay now. I feel, well, I'm famished. I didn't have much to eat today."
There was a pause as the other end spoke.
"I'm in the mood for something fleshy, too. I'm headed home in a flash. I just have to finish drying off."
She smiled.
"Yes, business was great at the diner. But all I had time for today was a little snack."
I hope you enjoyed Skinny Legs, as written by Eli Pope and performed by me, Paul J. McSorley. Our second tale of the evening is written by Eli Pope and performed by yours truly. In it, a man is accused of murdering his estranged parents, but while explaining his innocence, eerie events unfold, leading even the detective to question the nature of reality.
Hey, it is Ryan Seacrest here. If you love great games and a little extra excitement to your day, I got something fun for you. Chumba Casino and I have teamed up to create an exclusive online social casino game. It's called Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's fun and free to play, just like all your favorites from Chumba Casino. And every spin brings 10,000 ways to keep the good times going. Check it out and play for free today at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Now, without further ado, I present to you No Time to Say Goodbye.
Something happened I didn't expect, nor am I able to figure out exactly just what in flip did happen. I attempted to help relive the past today, and something happened. I can't seem to comprehend it all. So I guess it's safe to say that I don't know what happened. Baffling is all that comes to mind. Am I stoned? I don't think so, but I am questioning my sanity at this precise moment in time. I question life as I thought I knew how it existed, yet now I suddenly wonder if I'm really just some higher being from another planet's experiment, or some deep cover government op where I was sold or abducted into as a child. I question everything. I'm contemplating if I am even here right now, or trapped in a parallel world that only reflects questions back at me. I force myself to ask aloud, "Can you hear me? Or can you see me? Is there anybody out there?" I hear my voice slice through the silence. I wait impatiently for some kind of return response. Anything. But I hear nothing but tiny, faint, unintelligible voices I recognize but can make nothing of any sense of conversation. I believe there are two voices, one male and one female, but the low hum of static garbles what little sound I am able to decipher. Maybe my tinnitus is coming on strong and that's what's adding to all this confusion. No matter, no one attempts to answer my questions. My mind, as entangled as it is, continues to swirl around me in circles as hard as I try to reel it all back in and capture it, as if I were holding a net to snag up the evasive largemouth bass that, in reality, is my desperation. This feeling inside my brain carries me off like an echo inside a hollowness that faintly repeats the same nothingness as I try but just can't snag and control it long enough to identify just what the hell this is. It's maddening. This thought of knowing what I know is something I just can't recall. It's on the edge, on the tip of my tongue, but I hold on to the parapet high above a deep crevasse, realizing if I keep attempting to talk it out, I risk the danger easily loosening what little grip on reality I have and slipping off, tumbling end over end into an endless roll, my limbs flailing, trying to grab onto anything and pull myself back up against the force of gravity. I don't dare step too close, even if it does feel I could latch on and pull myself close enough to unmask this feeling of emptiness and confusion. So, I sit back and take in a deep, deep breath. I'm in my mid-60s. I have high blood pressure. I'm medicated, of course. My doctor's nurse practitioner just warned me after last week's blood work that I am likely on the 10-year plan towards either a heart attack or stroke without the medication and more exercise. So believe me when I tell you, I need to take a moment and take in a breath, recalculate, recontemplate, along with rejuvenate and possibly regurgitate because of all that just dropped on me like a bomb. Seriously, Officer Lincoln, is it? I mean, you don't really think I killed them, do you? I mean, it's my mom and dad, for Christ's sake. I'm just baffled, likely still in shock. How do I tell this Jekyll that... What actually believes I had something to do with my parents disappearing? Is he insane? Am I on candy camera? I haven't even begun to tell anyone what just friggin' happened because I'm still trying to sort it all out in my own damn head, and they already think I'm some crazed out son that not only wants to off one of his parents, but both of them. Even though they haven't seen each other for over 50 years. I'm going to need a glass of water, Officer Lincoln. I have a feeling this is going to take a while. So it started as kind of a typical Sunday morning, with the exception of having my mother stay the weekend with us. She usually lives with my sister and her family. They own a family restaurant and work crazy long hours. They take Mom with them, and she sits in the office and colors in coloring books and works on word circle puzzles. She's 90 years old and has dementia. She's reverted back to almost being the child. She's sweet and looks up like I am the father, her hero in the life she's now been relegated to. My sister is a half-sister. My parents got divorced when I was 7. My stepdad and mom raised me along with 3 stepbrothers and later the half-sister I'm referring. We are all grown, of course. Both of my step-parents, my mom's husband and my dad's wife, passed not that long ago. It spiraled both of my parents deeper into their world of confusion, time loss, and repetition of the same questions. Mom lives with my sister. My dad has resided in the memory care unit of an assisted living home in a town just west of where I live. We visit him weekly now, even though we never really knew each other or had a relationship. That's another story, though, for another time. I'm rambling, I know. It's nerve-wracking to be sitting in a small square room painted a sickeningly pale yellow with a black rectangular window that you just know has other people you can't see on the backside, judging every word, hesitation, fidgeting movement, or pause as you rattle through your defense. Sitting across from 2 detectives that appear far more like Laurel and Hardy, one skinny and lanky while the other appears to have been the only one shoving donuts down his gullet for the past 10 years. Both have the same eyes casting doubt on every word I let slip from my mouth. I know I should ask for a lawyer, but they haven't given me my Miranda yet, so I keep spilling words out, attempting to clear my name with this bizarre story I keep swearing is nothing but the truth, so help me God. So, Officer Lincoln, it was becoming late afternoon, time we usually go see my dad in the memory care. My wife thought it would be neat to take my mom with us to see the man she was once married to, some 50 years earlier. They hadn't seen each other, and my mom sounded interested. Confused, but interested.
Did your wife go with you? Officer Lincoln asked. And you can call me Bob. No need to be formal, Steve. You don't mind if I call you Steve, do you?
No, sir. That's fine, Bob. How about him?
I nodded to the skinny guy who just sat staring with an all-knowing skepticism.
That's Ted. He's here to observe at this point. Please direct your answers to me for now.
I'd be more comfortable if you were on the other side of that two-way glass instead of sitting here like a vulture ready to scavenge on my still-living carcass.
Bob chuckled and glanced over to Ted before directing his comment to him.
You actually do look a little like a hungry vulture, Ted. How about you going and getting a snack and leaving this with me? I'll be fine.
Ted moved his attention towards his partner. It appeared it took great contemplation and mental force to do so. He obviously wanted me to be his meal. I think he was totally convinced I'd killed my parents and disposed of their bodies, which I had done no such thing.
Ted slowly rose from his chair, placing both of his long fingers on top of the table, his Timex watch face tossing a quick flash of glare from the overhead light directly into my eye. It felt like a laser slicing through my retina for a second, causing me to close my eye and quickly look away. I knew he would take the gesture as a sign of my guilt. He leaned over and whispered something into Bob's ear, just low enough I was unable to make out the words. And then he looked back at me, or I should say, down at me from his now elevated position. He gave me a glare as if he were certain he would later be my hangman. He drew two of his fingers up and pointed them at his eyes, and then as he lowered his hand towards me, folded his fingers in, except for his pointing finger, which he directed at me in that all-knowing, "I'll be watching you," before nodding to the blackened window. Yes, I caught his reference from his sign language. No words needed. He was starving, and he was sure I'd eventually give in and be his meal. I was shaken. Hell, I'll admit it, I was scared shitless. But sometimes when I've felt that way in my past, I act out in a way one would not expect. Maybe a last-ditch effort to fool the aggressor into seeing that they didn't scare me or hold any power over my will. I lifted my hand up, knowing I had done nothing wrong, and folded my fingers tightly into a fist before letting my middle finger rise above the rest in a worldwide recognizable salute of defiance as I reiterated the gesture with an over-exaggerated mouthing of four blunt and harsh words, silently, but just as loud as if I had yelled them into his face. Fuck you, Teddy boy. I swear that lanky SOB withered several inches in height as he typed in the code on the door lock beside the door before turning back and looking at Bob as he stepped out. I couldn't help myself. I was always the guy that needed the last word when dealing with a dick. Abide, Teddy. The real detective doesn't need you anymore. And I gave him the smoochy kiss from my lips as the door stole the last of the defeat tattooed in his pupils as it closed and the magnetic click sounded its latching.
Okay, Steve, we'll give you that round between you and Ted to you. But it's time we get through your story of what happened. Time is of the essence in finding your parents. At 90 years old each, medications and confusion along with possible lack of food and water, well, you know, we need to move quickly as possible. I understand that, and I'm fully with you. But I didn't hurt them. I didn't hide them, and I didn't take them from the memory care unit. They have to still be there. I realize it must look badly for me, but think of the intricacies of any attempt to sneak a 90-year-old person with the frailty they have, along with dementia, let alone two of them. Trying to prod both of them, pushing their walkers past all the other residents through coded locked doors. I mean, have you thought this out? And what would my purpose be? Neither one has any money or valuables to steal, and I have siblings. Don't you think they'd be on my ass if I pulled something like this off? I have no reasons. I rattled off as fast as the words could exit my lips without tripping over each.
I do not know what happened. One minute we were there, and the next I woke up in a fog. I don't even know where my wife is. Are you thinking I added her to my list of kills too?
I mean, you were in a room full of old decrepit loonies who didn't know breakfast from midnight snacks. Fuck you, Bob. Those are not only my parents you were referring to as loonies, but men and women my wife and I have come to know and care for. And my parents. I won't listen to you talk about any of them in those degrading terms. Don't be a fucking teddy boy.
Bob looked down at the table, I'm assuming in a veil of shame, but it was only for a moment. He lifted his gaze and stared directly into my eyes, a cold burning stare that offered a direct challenge to me. I felt it being etched into my psyche, every bit as smoldering hot as if he were dragging a wood-burning tool across my flesh.
Steve, would you really have me believe that they just disappeared into another world? Poof. Gone from sight in a room full of other residents and nurses who saw nothing? You know that's not possible in this world, don't you?
In this world, Bob, all I know is that they were there together. I was squatted between them trying to explain that they were both married to each other over 50 years ago, that I was the product of that marriage, their son, made from that union. They both looked at me like they couldn't totally conceive the idea. They looked blankly at me. My mom questioned me.
So I was married to him for 13 years? And I divorced him? I don't even remember why I would have.
To which he answered, because I was an asshole. I smiled at my dad's answer. I looked over at my wife and she was smiling too. She snapped the picture, the main reason we took my mom there. It wasn't to make sure that they knew and remembered each other. It was more selfish a reason. I wanted a picture to remember my mom and dad back together with me in the middle after over 50 years of absence between the three of us, before they passed. I spoke as if I was not only pleading my case, my innocence, but also a bit of my confession of selfishness, not guilty of taking their lives. All I was guilty of was taking a risk of confusing them with my desire to reminisce a small slice of shared time together. And do you know what, Bob? I'm clueless, I confess. What, Steve?
For a tiny speck of a moment, I could see it in their eyes. They both knew each other. My father, in his own special way, recognized and confessed their split was entirely his fault. They both had a glimpse of their past and reconciled it between them. They both smiled. I looked at my mom and then to my dad, and I saw the moment as if I were inside both of their minds. They had been in love, and it had been lost in a time over 50 years ago because of my dad's immaturity and selfishness. And he acknowledged that above all the lost memories and time. I teared up. I couldn't help it. Do you really think, after seeing that shared love again between them, that I am heartless enough to take that gift we gave them away from them and steal them away someplace to kill them? I looked up and pleadingly stared into my accuser's eyes. That would make me the coldest, most heartless son of a bitch ever. And my mom was never at any time ever a bitch. I am the son of an angel. An angel who was mixed with the selfish heart of a young man who was good, but selfish. That's all. That's quite a story, Steve. Not much of an alibi, though, but quite a story indeed. Did anyone see you while you were there? And by that, I mean a nurse, of course. A memory care resident wouldn't really carry much weight, if you know what I mean. I don't know. I wasn't planning on needing witnesses or alibis for taking my mother to see my dad at this late stage of both their lives. I love my parents, Bob. I love my wife. I love my son and daughter and granddaughter. I'm no killer. I'm a family man. My stomach turns over and my insides ache if I hit an animal that runs in front of me and I hit it. If it came to killing to survive, I'm a dead man walking.
I bowed my head to the table. I felt completely empty, drained of everything from thoughts to nutrients.
empty. I mustered just enough energy to try and explain one more thought. I think they passed into... I hesitated. I knew what Bob would think. Hell, I knew Ted would be laughing at me behind the one-way glass. But I continued. And you are going to likely wrap me up in your tidy little description of crazy, a raging lunatic. But I can't imagine any outcome other than my parents somehow passed on to another level or dimension. I looked up and into Bob's eyes with a firm, unwavering stance. Or that my brain finally short-circuited from the bourbon I enjoy most nights, and it's taken its toll and turned me batshit crazy. Bob sat back into his chair, his left hand raised slowly and cupped the day's stubble on his chin and began to massage it. I could hear the scratchy sound of the hairs being rubbed by his calloused fingers. He glanced over to the blackened window and gave a small shrug as if to admit that this case had beat him, leaving him totally confused. He turned back to Steve, who just sat quietly in what appeared to be deep reflective thought. Bob noticed an odd smile began to wash across Steve's face, and his eyes slightly wavered back and forth with tiny palpitations. Bob noticed an odd sequence of flashes, much like the light reflecting a dark room lit by a television changing channels, the colors going from faint blue to shades of reddish-orange. Steve didn't move, still holding his head in a statuesque stance as his eyes barely flickered in a jittered low rumble, like one would imagine the penny that was placed on the track by a young boy, full of anticipation of it ending up being flattened by the train as the string of cars pulled by the three diesel engines barreling down the rails, causing that copper coin to nearly hover from the rumble. Bob sat up forward and paused for a moment before he leaned in towards Steve, who never retracted back or moved so much as an eyelash. His eyes still glowed oddly and slightly pulsated, appearing lost in a deep trance. Suddenly, Bob took a deep breath and gripped the edge of the table as he pulled himself ever closer to Steve until they were face to face, eye to eye. He could see it. At first, he thought he must have dozed off, but after realizing he hadn't, the sight in Steve's eyes drew him in closer for investigation. He saw two outlines of what appeared to be an old couple. He shook his head as if to attempt to clear his rattled thoughts at what he couldn't possibly be seeing. But they were there, their reflections full of smiles of a young couple who had to be in love. They were holding hands and gazing into each other's eyes. But they weren't a young couple. Bob reached up and rubbed both eyes, clearing any fog or eye goo that may be causing this odd distortion he was surely imagining. This couple was old. Old and wrinkled, but happy, smiling, wrapped tightly into a cocoon of affection. But they had to be at least in their 80s or 90s. It couldn't be. It was like he was watching a couple live out their fantasy of being back together after a lifetime of missing each other. Steve's eyes began to water. Bob was so close that he could feel the warm, moist air leaving Steve's lungs as it exited from his lips. A tear that Bob fought hard to keep from sliding out found its way to light and slid down his face and wove in between the small hairs poking from his cheek. He was a tough cop who had seen it all. He was much too grizzled a man to have a soft spot inside. He had seen the worst of people, never anything full of happy emotions, such as two old folks swimming in love for each other so deep they were nearly drowning in the affection together. Steve blinked and his eyes suddenly just went dark. It was gone. The image of the old couple diminished into a mere reflection of the tough-skinned cop gone soft staring back at himself. Everything suddenly became uncomfortable. It felt like he had been caught with his hand stuck in the cookie jar. He realized how close he was to Steve, and he suddenly felt queer, in the old sense of the word. Odd, mixed up. He heard the door to the interrogation room squeak as it began to open, and it drew his attention away just enough to begin pulling back. Steve's eyes flicked again with a bright flash, and it called his attention back, and the couple's image began to clear, like a fog lifting. Their images began to come back into focus. They were young, in their mid-20s. They were dressed oddly for today's times, more like the mid to late 50s. They were the same couple, though. He watched as the couple's smiles broadened, their hands reaching for the other's until they became clasped tightly together. The entire thing felt beautiful and warm, like he was peering in on the birth of a new romance. A bright smile began to spread across Bob's entire face, and as it grew, the image of the couple faded slowly away as if in time with the smile growing. And then the door slammed shut with a bang and everything stopped. Steve's eyes closed and then opened in several blinks, and Bob felt very uncomfortable as Ted rushed into the room.
"What the hell is going on, Bob?" he spoke with a loud grumble. "What in fuck's sake are you two doing? This is a damn murder investigation, and it feels like I've been watching Brokeback Mountain."
Bob turned in a daze and said only four words. "He didn't do it." And that was that. There was no evidence, no bodies, no witnesses, no murder. Bob looked at Steve after escorting him out of the interrogation room, Ted still baffled and rambling about what he had witnessed from behind the glass, and as the front door to the Maryville police station opened, Bob looked at Steve and simply said,
"I'm sorry. I'm sorry for all of this. I'm sorry for Ted and my accusations. And I'm sorry for your loss, if that's what this is. I don't know what just happened. I'm not sure I even want to try to decipher it all. So am I free to go? I mean, where are..." "I don't know, Steve. Just go. Live life with the ones you love. I'm going to go visit my folks today. I'm going to give them both hugs and tell them I love them."
I hope you enjoyed No Time to Say Goodbye, as written by Eli Pope and performed by Paul J. McSorley. Also, don't forget, we have our own book out. Since 2012, Chilling Tales for Dark Nights has been keeping people awake through the night with terrifying audio renditions of tales from the darkest minds modern memory has to offer. Now, in this first of three volumes, collected are 30 tales never before available by some of the most prolific and talented authors of the online community, each one accompanied by a suitably grim illustration by David Romero. Strange cats, body mutilations, demonic apartments, revenge from beyond the grave, and yes, even a man-eating monster or two. All of these and more beckon you further into the darkness. Turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Who needs sleep anyway? Check it out at Amazon today or by going to chillingbook.com. On to the shows. Longtime resident Otis Jiry has his very own show here on our network, Scary Stories Told in the Dark, which you can hear every Sunday night. We also have Eric Peabody's Horror Hill, a podcast dedicated to some of our deeper and darker tales. We hope you check him out. Andrew Blood's Dark Tales airs Fridays, featuring some Southern down-home horror. And don't forget to check out the Fear from the Heartland archives, featuring more than 120 episodes. Well, friends, our weekly descent into the depths has just about come to a close. But before we go, I'd like to take a moment to thank you for joining us tonight and remind you to take a moment to stop by our iTunes page and leave Chilling Tales for Dark Nights a 5-star review and a kind word. And follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram if you haven't already. And of course, subscribe to us on YouTube, where you can find an archive of our work going back to 2012. And consider signing up as a patron at our website, ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com, to show your support and get all of our content ad-free. I'm your host of the evening, Paul J. McSorley, and it's been a pleasure. Tune in again next week when we once again turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Sweet dreams, listener. Sweet dreams. Ha 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 ha.
Hey, it is Ryan Seacrest here. Want to bring a little Hollywood excitement to your day? Take a few spins with Chumba Casino's brand new game, Ryan Seacrest's 10K Ways. It's free and features 10,000 ways to play, giving you nonstop action, including thrilling bonus respins and cascading reels. Every spin brings something new, so step into the spotlight. Enjoy the excitement and play today at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.